Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome to Today's Issues. I'm Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Abe Hamilton, who is AFA Public Policy Analyst. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning. How are you, Ed?
I'm doing good. Did you have a good weekend?
I did until I got the news about the shootings in Baton Rouge.
I know. It's getting to be a regular occurrence, it seems like, here recently with the shootings in Dallas, the shootings in Baton Rouge over the weekend when the suspected cop killer, Gavin Long, also known as Cosmo Stetaprena or some Penra, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, and now police and investigators are putting together as much as they can concerning motivation. He was a former Nation of Islam, member of the Nation of Islam, and so this is, it's disturbing, and it gives the impression that the country is on the brink of, I won't say anarchy because I don't want to overstate it because this is not anarchy. But it reminds me of 1968. Now, you are too young to remember that other than reading about it, but I was just 10 years old in the summer, especially the summer of 1968, when it seemed like the divisions inside the country just boiled over. Yeah. On college campuses, I mean, the Democratic National Convention that year had just terrible protests, and the divisions seem just as deep as at that time in our current day, but I don't remember cops being shot. You know, this seems to be a new twist, and I sometimes wonder about what radical forces are at work behind some of the protest movements. That's not to say all the protesters are radical, but that there may be money and what have you being funneled into these kinds of protests in order to bring anarchy. I'm not a conspiracy person, Abe, yeah, but you just wonder what's at work here in this country.
Yeah, it's frightening and startling and alarming to see all of these things come to bear as they are. And we know in the wake of the Michael Brown situation in Missouri before that there were protests that resulted in Ferguson itself being burned down, and the facts came out afterwards that a lot of those people were bussed into Ferguson from external places, you know, so you know it takes money, you know, and things of that nature. And then you have some reports circulating now that indicate that George Soros is funding the Black Lives Matter movement, and you're the second person I've heard say that. As another gentlemen, I heard say that these tensions that we're facing now are reminiscent of 1960s, particularly 68. But the same observation that you made, police officers weren't being shot then.
Right.
And they're being shot now. And we all know that the animus ultimately behind this extreme demonstration of nothing short of pure evil is the evil one himself.
Yes.
And here being, you know, a Christian radio ministry, I think it's important that we continuously point that out. You know, we don't want to allow the real culprit, the main culprit, to get a pass while we try to, you know, parse the nuances of the situation. And then secondarily point out that there are people that are allowing themselves to be used to facilitate works of darkness, you know, works of evil. And it's chilling. You know, I have friends who are police officers. You know, I have people I've worked with over the years who are police officers, and I can't help but think and worry and pray for their families, you know, the concern of a wife who her husband happens to be a police officer right now. Can you imagine the thoughts that go through her mind, you know, what they have to discuss perhaps?
And that's also, that's always a threat if you're a police officer or, you know, a fireman or one of those kinds of, you know, first line, you know, defenders. But now, especially, you're right. You're thinking, you know, is someone going to walk? You mentioned I didn't know this, but one of the officers shot in Baton Rouge, you said he was shot when he was just vacuuming out his car?
Yeah, there was a report that I read on Fox News just this morning that one of the officers were vacuuming out their cars, you know, while they were shot. And I mean, I can't imagine that. I can't right. imagine that. And I said before here on the radio, we have to be careful. People, we have to be careful not to confuse cries for justice with a latent desire for revenge.
Yes.
And there could be nothing short of a desire for, you know, vengeance when things of this nature transpire, because what justice is served by murdering police officers who have nothing to do with anything that you could be assuming that you're even right. protesting what may be perceived as legitimate injustice? What would these officers have to do with that? Nothing.
Especially now it's been made pretty clear since the Dallas shootings that the city of Dallas had been making strides. The police department had been making efforts to try to hear complaints from especially the black community. I'm guessing probably also the Hispanic community in Dallas. So we want to hear your complaints and we want to try to improve relations. Mm-hmm. You have to understand, at least I try to understand, that the police, they are primarily going to be dealing with breaking lawbreakers. Not always. Sometimes you get a call and you deal with someone who's not a lawbreaker. And so you have to remember, okay, they're going to be investigating, you know, lawbreakers and those kinds of things. So there's already a little bit of a sense of, you know, they're those guys, men and women who do that. But in Dallas, they were trying to say, look, okay, well, we want to hear what you have to say. We're going to try to improve relations with the community at large mm-hmm. so that when we do have to make arrests, we have an understanding that that's all we're doing. And yet you had these officers shot down. Like you said, that has nothing to, they were one of the kind of model cities
yeah.
in trying to improve relations. So what good does it do if you want to solve, you know, injustice in, say, Topeka, Kansas, just picking one out of the hat? What good does it do to kill police officers in Dallas?
It does no good. It does no good. And the reports indicate, you know, that the person who committed these murders, Gavin Long, in Baton Rouge, and it's important to note that one of the officers who was shot is fighting for their lives, currently in critical right. condition, and there's two other officers who sustained injuries, albeit non-life-threatening. But this guy came from Kansas City, Missouri.
Yes.
You know, came all the way from Kansas City, Missouri to do nothing but what appears to be murder police officers.
Yeah. Well, and folks, what we're going to be doing is, I personally don't want to ignore, you know, the complaints of people in minority communities who say, you know, listen, we think that the police are judging us as a community unfairly. One of the things we're going to try to do next hour, we've got a lot to talk about today, so I'm hoping to be able to get to this today, but to hear a speech made last week by Senator Tim Scott, Republican from South Carolina, the only black Republican in the Senate. He made a speech on the Senate floor regarding some of the conflicts he's had with law enforcement. I want to hear that. And we're going to try to play some clips and discuss that. We won't have much time because we do have another guest next hour. But those kinds of issues are things I feel confident Americans can resolve. Shooting police, you mentioned, you know, friends and family. My daughter-in-law's father is a police officer in the county in which I live, and that's my thoughts immediately turned to him.
Yeah,
you know, Tim Matthews is his name, and I just thought, wow, Lord, just protect Tim, you know. And so anyway, this is something that's ongoing. This is, you know, possibly a very contentious summer, what's left of it, ahead of us. So we will continue to talk about some of those issues. In just a few minutes, though, we're going to have legal analyst Jenna Ellis on talking about the legal basis for a moral constitution. Bottom of the hour, we're going to have Fred Jackson in, who's a news director for American Family News, talking about the Republican National Convention. That kicks off today and goes through Thursday. That has the possibility to be contentious, at least outside the gathering place. And we're also going to be talking to Maisie Pyburn, who is with the with American Family Studios. We have a DVD from the Cultural Institute, which is internal to AFA, we're going to be talking about a presentation that Dr. Alveda King made here at our studios. And then next hour, as I kind of mentioned, best-selling author Dr. Greg Jantz, who is going to be talking about 10 tips for parenting the smartphone generation. Those of us from the dumb phone generation, you know, I don't have really dogs in that fight. I do have grandkids now, but
yeah.
It's not my primary job to raise them up. But I would like to know what Dr. Jantz has to say. So we'll be talking about all that and probably more. Who knows? As the program goes on, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Our next guest, our first guest, really, is attorney and legal analyst Jenna Ellis, who is author of the book, The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution. This is an issue that we talk about quite regularly here at American Family Association. Jenna, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on today.
Well, your book, The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution. Now, this is a tongue-in-cheek kind of question, but isn't it true that the U.S. Constitution is a quote-unquote neutral document? I mean, there's no religion in there. There's no morality. This is just how we run the country. I mean, that's the kind of thing we hear from secularists. But now here you've got an entire book about a moral constitution. Who's telling the truth here?
Yeah, so we have to understand what the Constitution is and put it in context. It is simply the law. It's the grant of limited powers to the federal government, but it's based on the Declaration's mandate, which is to preserve and protect our rights that come from God. And so what the Constitution does in context is to preserve and protect those rights. And if we understand the law as a civil government mechanism, law is always used to impose a specific morality and worldview on the culture. It's just whose morality are we talking about? And so when we talk about the Constitution, again, in context, we have to understand its role, scope, and purpose. And to do that, we have to see that it was founded upon the principles in the Declaration of Independence, which specifically says, truth is, all law comes from God, and the only rights that we have as human beings made in the image of God, endowed by our Creator, are the unalienable rights that come from biblical morality.
Hey, Jenna, thank you for that. I appreciate that answer, and my heart stirs in hearing it. But I heard when you said that the Constitution was meant to protect and enforce the mandate that actually was penned in the Declaration of Independence. So my question for you is, what has been the results? Or let me ask you, it's a twofold question, I'd say. Do you believe that constitutional interpretation and navigation has been pursued in modern times as completely separate from the Declaration of Independence? And if so, what has been the results of that upon our country?
And the answer to that is yes. It absolutely has been pursued in the judicial branch apart from the Declaration. We have thought through the progressive agenda, and we've seen this over the last 50 or 60 years, that we're relegating the Declaration of Independence to just a mere historical document. It's passe, it's nice history, but it has no binding legal precedent on us today. That's only the Constitution. So the secularists, as we pointed out at the beginning, say, well, God is nowhere in the Constitution. But people ask the question, is a law constitutional? But we never ask, well, where does the Constitution get its authority from? And if we understand that, we absolutely cannot separate it from the Declaration, because the Declaration is what provides the legitimate authority based upon the Word of God and fundamental truth that all law comes from God, that then the Constitution can fulfill that mandate. All that it is simply granting very limited specific powers to the federal government to protect the individual rights that come from God. So what we've seen over the last 50 or 60 years is that the judicial branch has attempted to become above the Constitution and say, we are going to excise specific words and phrases, build all kinds of doctrines around that, and refer to this legal doctrine rather than referring to the actual purpose of the Constitution and realizing that the judicial branch's only legal function and only appropriate function is to determine what specific limited power the federal government has and if they're exercising that and applying it appropriately to preserve and protect our rights. And so rights have to be understood that they come from God. That's what inalienable means. We can't fabricate new rights like women's rights or the right to abortion or the right to same-sex marriage. That is found nowhere in the truth of God. That is found nowhere in how the Declaration established this country. That is simply a legal fiction.
Jenna, let me ask you this. One of the things that you deal with and those who are like you are fighting to preserve the real Constitution and the values that have undergirded this country for its many years, well over two centuries of being a republic. This idea of the Constitution as something that can be interpreted strictly and according to the meaning of the words and the intent of the founders, and the idea of a fluid view of the Constitution that changes with time and with public opinion. Here's the thing I don't understand when people argue for the fluid view. It changes, okay? So it seems to me if that were true, that would mean that society could revert back if it decided. If it decided that the blacks had no rights, or we're going to reinstitute slavery, or we're going to take away the right of women to vote, then as long as society thought that that was good, then the Constitution was flexible enough to allow that kind of backtracking. So what do these kind of living document enthusiasts think of that possibility? Would they agree?
They never go there, and they never see the logical conclusion of their worldview perspective. They just think that we'll be advancing their progressive agenda, but what they don't understand is by saying that it's a fluid constitution that bends and flexes to the sheer majority will of whatever happens to be the majority at any given moment, that takes any objective standard away from the law and actually renders the Constitution entirely meaningless. Because if it's fluid and it changes, given today what our perspective is, or tomorrow if we wanted to go back and institute slavery, there's no objective standard of morality and truth or law that can be imposed on culture. And so we're basically taking the teeth out of the Constitution and taking the entire notion that we are under the law. So then we simply become completely at the will of the majority of the Supreme Court, which is exactly what happened. And what I always say is, why is the Constitution this one legal document that bends and flexes and changes and is completely subjective? If I walked into court and I had a written contract between my client and another party, and I said, "Judge, no, this, you know, I understand that this says that my client is supposed to, you know, pay this amount to the other party, but, you know, this is a subjective document. It might bend and change, and my client doesn't really feel like that today." I would get laughed out of the courtroom because we understand words mean something. Law is inherently valuable and objective. And so why are we allowing these fictitious principles to be applied to our highest law when that's just simply fundamentally illogical? And that's what we're seeing on the Supreme Court today. And with things like the gender identity issue, with things like the executive branch just usurping their power, they're token referencing the Constitution while living in a completely relativistic society and trying to sell us on that notion that they're being somehow constitutional. So we have to take back the objective standard of law.
Jenna, this is Abe here again. Based on exactly what you said, and by the way, I agree with you, I'm going to ask a pretty big question now. You just said we need to take back the objective standard of law that the Constitution represents. Is it too late to do that, or can we still do that? And if we can, how do we do that?
Right. And I do not believe that it's too late. I think that we are heading 100 miles an hour in the very, very wrong direction. But there is always the ability to repent and call for God's mercy. And so that's the first thing we have to do as a society, is repent and to call on God and pray for our nation. But then we also have to become educated. We have to understand this and not be the Christian that says, well, I believe, and the secular says, well, I don't believe. And so then we're actually facing the argument on a relativistic plane, and we're assuming that we have to have a majority vote before we can say truth is. We have to start standing up and saying truth is, regardless if one person believes it or 100% of people believe it, truth is. And this is what my book is about, is to say we need to stop arguing about the faith of the founding fathers, my belief versus your belief, what I think is best for society. We actually have a legal argument that is very clear, if you go back to the founding documents, to show the Constitution is based on Christian principles and based on the truth of the morality to which God has imposed. And we need to start advocating for that. We need to start articulating that, understanding it's not my First Amendment right to free speech. It's my right that God gave to me and endowed to me by virtue of being a human being made in the image of God that the First Amendment protects. That is a key distinction. And then once we understand that and we stand up for truth, we need to get involved and be active citizens, not only to go out and vote and make sure that we're doing that, but also I'm an advocate of the Convention of States Project as a constitutional law attorney. You can find out more about that at conventionofstates.com. It's trying to change a couple of the procedural elements in the Constitution that Article 5 of the Constitution specifically allows for. The founders put that in place to say when the federal government usurps their authority, they become irresponsible. We can go back into the Constitution and we can amend it to better fulfill its mandate when the standard is truth.
And that would be from the state level. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. That would be from the state level without having to go through Washington, right?
Exactly. So Article 5 allows two ways to amend the Constitution, not entirely overhaul it at all, but simply amend it and basically redistribute a couple of the powers, like, for example, putting term limits on the Supreme Court. Having a balanced budget, those types of procedural things that would have immediate change to the operation of the federal government. Congress can propose an amendment any day that they're in session by two-thirds of both houses. But Article 5 gives a second way where the state legislatures can actually step into the role of Congress, and by two-thirds of the state, function and can step in and can say, we are going to propose amendments to the Constitution. And either way, whether it comes out of Congress or whether it comes out of the state, they still have to be ratified by a three-fourths majority.
Our guest has been attorney and legal analyst Jenna Ellis, who's author of the book, The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution. It is subtitled, A Guide for Christians to Understand America's Constitutional Crisis. Jenna, where can people get a copy of your book?
My website is jennaellis.org. That's Jenna, E-L-L-I-S.org. I offer signed copies there, or you can go to any major retailer, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's available there as well.
Jenna, thank you so much for this, and we our appreciation to all the legal eagles who are fighting a desperate battle to keep the truth of our Constitution before the American people. Thank you so much, and best to you and your book.
Thank you so much, and thank you for what you're doing as well at the American Family Association. I really value what you're doing as well and support that.
All right. Thank you, Jenna. All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we are going to be talking with Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. It is national convention time for the GOP in Cleveland today through Thursday. We're going to be talking to him about what maybe we can expect. Next week is the Democratic National Convention. So as if the summer wasn't hot enough, we got hot things going on in Cleveland and Philadelphia next week. Abe and I will be back after the break.
Mm-hmm. Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Matthew Sorens, co-author of Seeking Refuge, on the shores of the global refugee crisis.
There are more forcibly displaced people in the world today, about 65 million, than any time in recorded history.
We'll also talk with Ken Costa, author of Know Your Why, and Jim Garlow, author of Well-Versed. That's next time on Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR, and online at AFR.net.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. From the Republican National Convention, I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Security here in Cleveland has become an even bigger deal in the aftermath of the police shootings in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Police officers now tasked with not only keeping delegates safe, but also each other. Ohio Governor John Kasich denied a request from the city's police union asking for a state of emergency. That declaration would have banned all legal gun owners from packing heat in public. City leaders had already banned dozens and dozens of weapons and gadgets, but not firearms. So you can carry an AR-15 outside the security perimeter, but you cannot carry tennis balls or cans of pork and beans. And City Hall says they have every right to implement the ban because pork and beans are not covered under the open carry law. Let's just hope nobody brings a tennis ball to a gunfight. From Cleveland, Ohio, at the Republican National Convention, I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman all this week. I am joined today by my co-host, Abe Hamilton, who is AFA Public Policy Analyst. And we want to welcome back into our studio here at the bunker, Fred Jackson, who's News Director for American Family News and One News Now. Fred, thank you. You always a breath of fresh air. You come in with facts, not just opinion. Sometimes you have some opinions.
I have opinions every now and then.
You have opinions. We have opinions.
First opinion is I'm glad I'm not in Cleveland.
Oh, my goodness. I am, too. I know for a lot of people who are just really into politics, this must be the thrill of a lifetime to go to a political convention like this. I'm not sure if you're in the media how it must be incredibly difficult to get in there.
Oh, it is. It is. And the logistics of a broadcast from there and the number of cameras you have to have. You're doing television. You've got live shots from there's so much potential for things to go wrong,
right?
Technically, with this, if you think shooting a basketball game on network TV or baseball is difficult, you talk about a convention when you have so much going on, and you've got your whole teams are there. I was listening to an interview this morning with Fox and Friends. It took them an hour to get from their hotel, because that's the other story in all of this, trying to, you know, streets are being blocked off by police to try to avoid the 20 to 30,000 protesters that are supposed to be in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. So you've got that nightmare to get to your studio, and then you're hoping technically everything is going to go okay. Mm-hmm. And it's live television. You don't know what people are going to say on camera. So it gets a little crazy, but there's a fun side to it too. I mean, convention, it's a big party.
Right.
Yeah, whether Democrat or Republican, it's a big party. You're seeing, you know, friends that you haven't seen for a while. And obviously, you're there to try to boost whoever your nominee is.
Well, let's talk for, because the big story in my mind has been the potential for the protests. Now, you know, we talked about, Abe and I talked about at the top of the program about the political divide, the polarization in our country, very similar, in my opinion, to 1968, although I don't, you know, cops didn't get shot like they are now, so it's obviously taken a violent turn. But I was thinking about the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago, and that turned violent and bloody. Now, my understanding, Fred, is, though, that over the last several decades, the police in these kinds of cities have kind of figured out how to try to keep protesters at a distance.
Yes.
But then I heard something this morning that the police were basically going to say, look, we're not going to get as involved. What are you hearing in terms of the potential for violent confrontations? There's bikers for Trump coming in. They're going to be protesting the protesters. I mean, this could turn into a circus.
It could. And what I've heard is that literally thousands of police officers from all over the country are coming in to help out. One of the things that they've done to try to control all of this is block off large areas, street areas, kind of like avoiding what happened in Nice on Friday, where you don't allow vehicles to come right up to the doorstep of the convention venue. So there's that kind of control that's going to be in place. Also, that kind of control for protesters. So I think what authorities are saying, you're going to be allowed to protest.
Right.
But you're not going to be allowed to descend into the convention center and do whatever you want.
Right.
But of course, you know, with what's going on in our country right now, I think there's heightened concern. That's why you're going to have, you know, helicopters overhead watching things. So, I mean, the city of Cleveland, obviously, they don't want to go down in history as a place where, you know, serious matters occurred with regards to protesters and clashes. They don't want
Chicago
that.
Has had that black eye since 1968.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So they're trying to avoid that kind of thing, and they believe they can with enough show of force and keeping the protesters back from the main venue.
And I'm sure that this is included in their calculations, but there were some reports out that showed that the Democratic National Committee had spent nearly $800,000.
Try a million.
A million on disruptive forces and things of that nature.
Yeah.
How has that, if at all, factored into the considerations and the planning for the Republican National
Convention? Yeah, that goes back and forth between the political parties all the time. You know, the Democrats will show up the Republican Party and vice versa. There'll be people there. There'll be observers. I think with the tension that's going on in the country right now, once again, the Democrats, I don't think, would want to have money traced back to an incident on the floor where there was physical confrontation. That's the, you know, we were talking about this in our newsroom story meeting this morning. I think we are reaching the point where whether you're liberal in your political ideology or you're conservative, people are tense over what's going on in this country right now. And they certainly do not want to be seen as enhancing any problems. And so I think as far as the party goes, that they will try to keep a fairly low profile with regards to protests. They're going to leave that up to the others who are coming into town. And let's not be naive about it. There are those who want the camera attention, and they will do everything possible to get that camera attention. So there will be confrontations, I believe, between police and these protesters. But as I was mentioning, the police, at least in the planning for this, are trying to keep that away from the main venue.
You know, Fred, one of the things that is always, you know, maybe the most fun about conventions as you watch them is the list of speakers. There's always jostling, too. I mean, there are speakers who get a 9:45 in the morning speaking slot, and they're the lesser lights on the GOP stage. Then you get the big moments for prime time, and then as you get to the last night, Thursday night, one of the things that we've kind of talked around here is for Thursday night's speakers, the founder of PayPal, Peter Thiel, I think is the way you pronounce his name, and he's an open homosexual. he has a primetime spot the same night that Donald Trump makes his big speech. So, you know, the question I have is, have you read anything, heard anything about the GOP, you know, moving in the direction of changing its views on, you know, marriage, you know, natural marriage or any of those things? Because this, I'm guessing that Peter Thiel is going to make a push, or make part of his speech will be to encourage the Republican Party to leave social conservatives and that kind of view in the past.
Yeah, and that came about back several months ago. There were some committee meetings where the pro-homosexual side of things, log cabin Republicans, et cetera, I thought they had made some inroads. And then we heard the stories last week from the platform committees as saying that, you know, they're formally going to endorse traditional marriage.
Right.
So there was that there. So I think we would be naive not to know that there are political calculations in these speeches. And I think the political calculation with having the PayPal CEO come in is kind of, okay, we know what the platform says, but we want to make sure that, at least for the public's digestion of all of this, that we are not hostile to homosexuals. If they want to come in and they support us in our economic views, for instance, is that we are going to give them a chance to talk about that. Now, what he is going to say on Thursday night is another thing. Is he going right. to lecture the Republican Party? Who knows? But I think allowing him in that primetime spot is a political calculation to address what they know is going to be the criticism from Democrats and other liberals out there that the party is closed, the Republican Party is closed to the homosexual point of view.
I have a follow-up to you on that, Fred. Do you think that Peter Thiel, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
I think it's Thiel.
Thiel's presence on the lineup indicates not necessarily a present sentiment, but a potential future sentiment that the Republican Party is not only willing to entertain the conversation, but the party is willing to slam the door on social conservatives completely.
Yeah.
And I know that's similar to Ed's question, but...
Well, I think if you go back to the stories last week about the platform, my takeaway from the platform being very strong, the platform we're talking about
right.
now this is
mm-hmm.
the public document.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This is what we support. Mm-hmm. They're speaking out against abortion.
Mm-hmm.
They're speaking out in favor of traditional marriage. And there's a difference between speaking out in favor of traditional marriage and coming out verbally and saying we're opposed to homosexual marriage.
Right.
There is a difference yeah. in mm-hmm. all of that. What I take from all of this is that the Republican Party understands that if it hopes to be victorious in November, it really, really needs the support of that huge base of conservatives.
Right.
That was reflected in the platform decisions last week. On the other hand, as I was saying, in the PC world, they have to still be seen as leaving the door open for the log cabin Republican type right. ideology. And so they're trying to walk the plank here on this one. To your question, Abe, though, do I see down the road where they would slam the door shut on conservatism? I don't see that in the near future. If they saw that in the near future, they would not come out as strong as they did for social conservative issues last week in the platform. They just wouldn't do that. At this point, they still understand they have some people estimate a 30-40% of their constituency is very strong conservative on those values of abortion and traditional marriage, and they simply cannot afford to dismiss that. Not at this point.
As far as you can tell, any surprises? I mean, these things are always heavily scripted.
Yes.
You know, these conventions, both Republican and Democrat. They don't want room for surprises because yeah. that's letting, you know, the genie out of the bottle, and then you've got to do damage control. This is all supposed to, like you said, one big party. They want to see a lot of happy faces. They want to try to get ahead of any potential controversies. And they don't want speakers saying anything that they then have to defend. Having said all that, Are you hearing anything in terms of surprises, any surprise speakers, appearances from politicians like Jeb Bush, who said he's not going, maybe he changes his mind? What are you hearing or reading about the potential for a surprise?
Well, you talk about prime time. Tonight, one of the prime time speakers, perhaps the prime time speaker, is going to be Melania Trump, wife of Donald Trump. And keeping with the kind of guy Donald Trump is, now, the nominee is not supposed to show up at the convention until he speaks, which is traditionally Thursday night. But Donald Trump is going to show up tonight to introduce his wife. So he's going to be there. He doesn't care about what they've done in the past, which ought not to surprise us. He's going to be there to introduce his wife. And he says, I just want to have a look around and see what they've done there. This is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
All right? So he is going to make it entertaining. So his wife will be speaking, and supposedly it's going to be a good speech because the theme I think that you're going to see, at least for today, is that Make America Safe Again. Mm. And so she's going to be part of that, but also speaking today, our people like Jeff Sessions is going to be there. We're going to have one of the military people that was involved with Benghazi is going to be speaking.
Michael Flynn,
yes,
Lieutenant General.
Or one of the other soldiers who was actually in Benghazi. So you're going to have those types of individuals speaking today, and no one's going to disagree with that kind of speaker. The Melania Trump interview is going to, if he becomes the president, I was just reading somewhere where she would be the first lady since John Quincy Adams' wife Louisa to be born abroad. Melania Trump was born in Slovenia. And she makes that point when people criticize Donald Trump over his stand on immigration. She points out her husband is not against immigration. He's against illegal immigration. And so there's going to be a lot of watching her. She's a very quiet lady for the most part.
Yeah.
But she's handled herself well in interviews with CNN when she's been confronted with, you know, her husband's, what some consider bombastic statements on things, that sort of thing. And she's handled herself very well. So people are going to be watching for her speech this evening. But I think the other big thing today is going to be the challenging of the rules. Mm. There are those out there who, and what they're going to be demanding is a state-by-state vote on changing the rules. The way things are right now, the delegates coming into the convention who voted for Donald Trump in the primaries must vote for him again at the convention. They want to change it so people can change their minds. There is still a group out there, and this is making one of the big stories for today, still a group out there that doesn't like Donald Trump.
Right.
They see this as perhaps their last opportunity to put a stick in the spokes, as it were.
Yeah.
But that's going to be difficult for them to do. They're still a small minority. A lot of them are people who voted, who favored Ted Cruz in the primaries. So that's going to unfold this afternoon. So they hope they can get the convention people behind them this afternoon and then move on to these primetime speakers.
Well, perhaps the selection of Mike Pence as the vice presidential candidate was meant to head some of that off. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that there's any just, you know, mere political calculation involved, but that was a very safe move if you're trying to shore up some support amongst conservatives and social conservatives, and so we'll wait and see. It you know, like you said when you first came in here, this is a big party. If you're a Republican, you know, you usually see Democrats and Republicans being, you know, pretty open and fun loving at these when they show up at somebody else's convention. We'll wait and see. 2016 has been a strange year.
Yeah.
So
one of the other things, the stories, is John Kasich, the governor of Ohio. He's not showing up.
Yeah.
He's not going to convention. Hmm. He says he doesn't share the values, the points of view of Donald Trump, so he's not going to show up. So he's the Republican governor. Now, a lot of people
of
are saying—
Of the host state.
Of the host state,
Of the host state, but that's the only state he won in the primaries.
Right.
Well, yeah, he's safe.
Yeah.
So that's just another—
This is highly unusual. The kind of stay-at-home sentiments that I've seen in 2016.
Yeah.
I mean, after very raucous primary season, a lot of insults, and they seemed, the hard feelings seemed to be genuine.
Yes.
And Jeb Bush, as I mentioned earlier, not coming. And so, yeah. Anyway, Fred, we may have you back in throughout the week to talk about what's happened the previous night.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, I'm sure on all the major networks, I guess all the networks, or is it just the cable news networks covering?
The major networks will certainly have a presence. Just want to mention, too, we are staffing our newsroom late into the evening tonight. We'll keep our newscasts up to date as to what's going on at the convention throughout the evening.
Good.
And, of course, onenewsnow.com, our news website. We'll keep everybody up to date with both videos and printed stories as to what's happening at the convention. And we'll do the same for the Democrats.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Fred. Appreciate it. And, folks, you can look, continue to listen to American Family News, American Family Radio, and also go to One News Now. For up-to-the-minute coverage of what is happening in Cleveland this week. Thank you, Fred.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we want to continue. We've been discussing race a lot over the last several weeks, and we have something that we think will help the conversation amongst Christians. And to discuss that with us is Maisie Pyburn, who is an intern with American Family Studios. And Maisie, welcome to today's issues. Welcome back, I should say.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
So you've been making the rounds on radio, and
yeah.
We're excited for you. And thanks for being on with us again.
Thanks for letting me be here. I really enjoy it. So
well, good. You know, we were talking at the top of the hour, Abe and I, top of the show, about the shootings in Baton Rouge and the racial discord. But we have something from the Cultural Institute, which is a division of American Family Association, American Family Studios, as I mentioned, that might help Christians as they continue this discussion. What is it that you have available?
So we have a Cultural Institute with Dr. Alveda King. And what a Cultural Institute is we have a live studio audience, and we have a speaker come in, and she talked about not only race in America, but she also talked about lies. So she has two different sessions. But
she's very, very strong in the pro-life movement.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. And I think that has a lot. I mean, race and pro-life have a lot to do. I mean, just being pro-life in general, no matter the skin color, is, I mean, basic. So,
right.
And I think that's what a lot of, you know, her faith is the basis for her views on both of those things. So. I actually have a verse that I would like to share with you guys that kind of just sums up everything.
I'm sorry, Maisie. We don't, this is political and cultural issues
right.
only. We don't allow the Bible in.
Okay, an exception.
Absolutely.
Yes, please.
The Bible undergirds everything supposedly we say and do, even when we talk about
absolutely.
Politics and culture. So go ahead.
So, yeah, it's Colossians chapter 3, verses 13 through 14, and it says, "Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you, and over all these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity." And that's what Dr. Alveda King talks about, is love leads to unity. Like, if we look to the cross first before we look to sides or violence or anything, the end result has to be love. And the result of that is unity. And I think that's her main point there, is let's look to the cross instead of being pro-black or pro-white. Let's be pro-Jesus. And that's what she says.
Amen. And I have to let everybody know, her real name is Maisie, but around here we call her Amazing.
Amazing. And she's probably never heard that before. And if she has, she's probably tired of it already this summer.
But I'm just tired of trying to live up to it. Just to be like, why do you call her that?
So my question for you, Maisie, based on Dr. King, and this is Dr. Alveda King, Martin Luther King Jr.'s niece, right?
Mm-hmm.
My question to you is, how does that relate, if at all, to understanding the life issue?
So if we look at, we have to go back even to Adam and Eve, where God created everyone in his image. We're all a descendant of Adam and Eve, no matter what their skin color is. Literally, our skin color is only skin deep. Like, it doesn't affect your blood. And I think that when we look, if our worldview is the cross, is Jesus, is God, is creation, then race is nothing. Our skin color is nothing. It all has to do with God and who's inside of us. So if we're looking to the cross instead of to our skin color, then I, you know, that's just the right way to do it. I think the result is love out of that.
Well, so. And so let me ask you this. I mean, it seems to me that if we are going to follow the, and we should, obviously, right. if the Apostle Paul said it, he's commanding us under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, we need to do it. So if we are to love one another and to love our neighbor as ourselves, and that is the, you know, the supreme commandment, then it seems like it would allow me as a white male to say, okay, I want to hear what my black brothers and sisters say
right.
about their life experiences. I mean, it seems like right. that's what love really does.
Yeah.
If I'm not loving my neighbors myself, I say, well, I don't care how life's treated
right.
you. I don't care if there's yeah. injustice. I don't care if you've got a raw deal. I've got mine, and that's all I care about. It seems like that real biblical love would help Christians navigate those shoals.
Right, and ultimately, we want to get to the truth. We want to get to the bottom of this. We know that people are feeling like they're not hurt, being heard. People
right.
are feeling like they are being oppressed, and that's a problem. If our brothers and sisters feel that way, we need to reach out to them and try to understand. So I think, yeah, exactly. If we look to Jesus, and if we are loving people like he loves, then we are going to be open to talking to them and not just have our own, you know, things coming up in our head. Well, you're wrong because of this. No, we need to listen just like we would want to be listened to at the same
time. So how do we just have a couple minutes left here? How can people get a hold a copy of Dr. Alveda King? Because these are one DVD.
Yep.
Tell us what is included in it and then how folks can get a copy of it.
So you can go to afastore.net, and there's a little tab at the top that says Cultural Institutes, and you'll be able to easily find it there. It's just called Race in America. And with the DVD, you're going to get her just talking. She's just going to give, you know, her life examples. Like she talks about current race relations, and then she talks about how that compares to when she was a child and when she was right. growing up around her uncle, Dr. Martin Luther King. And then she talks about the fallacy behind racism. And like that's what I mentioned earlier is racism is not founded because our skin color is only skin deep.
She's very strong on this. I
right.
remember interviewing her years ago about this. This is one of her main principles that guide her biblical teaching.
Right.
Is that you know, that we are one blood.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I appreciate how hard she hits that on that because we don't hear that a
right.
lot. I mean, that's what I like to say. She's a voice of reason for us in a very unreasonable time. She gives like insights of when she was growing up around Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and just different things. And then she has like a bonus extra question and answer interview at the end, and it's really insightful. So
yeah. So afastore.net, and mm-hmm. folks can go to the tab that says Cultural Institute. And yeah. we have many more things on there than just Dr. Alveda King, but this is very timely. So people will be able to go and they'll be able to see a number of other topics that we have different speakers
yeah.
have come
yeah.
in. I love the Cultural Institutes. It's great that we get these folks coming in. And it's a way to get Dr. Alveda King, for example, to every church or every
Absolutely.
Small group without yeah. having to pay her airfare. And you know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
you get the benefit of her insights over
yeah.
a long period of time. So
yeah, and it's not very long. It's only 28 minutes. So, I mean, it's not going to take a whole lot of time.
Yeah, 28 minutes for each speech, each address?
Yes, for her, for the main thing right in front of the live studio audience.
Okay.
She's about 28 minutes. So.
Okay. All right. Amazing Maisie Pyburn, our intern with American Family Studios, has been our guest. Thank you, Maisie, for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
AFAstore.net, folks, if you want to get a copy of the addresses from Dr. Alveda King, as well as the bonus question and answer with her. All right, Ed Vitagliano and Abe Hamilton, we're your co-hosts today. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit more about race, but then we're going to be talking about tips for parenting the smartphone generation. You'll want to stick around to get those kinds of tips. We'll be back after 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.